brings you Meet the Press, the prize-winning interview program produced by Lawrence C. Spivak. Four of America's top news reporters are ready for this unrehearsed news conference. Here's the moderator of Meet the Press, Lawrence Spivak.
Welcome once again to Meet the Press. Our guest today is Dr. Kwame Nkrumah of Ghana, the newest independent African state. Dr. Nkrumah has come to this country at the invitation of President Eisenhower. Dr. Nkrumah was born in Ghana, but received much of his adult education in the United States. For 10 years, he was at Lincoln University and the University of Pennsylvania, first as a student and then as a teacher. In 1947, he returned to the Gold Coast of Africa, where he rapidly assumed leadership in the fight for his country's independence. On March 6, 1957, Ghana became an independent nation, a member of the British Commonwealth, and Dr. Nkrumah was chosen Ghana's first prime minister. The birth of Ghana as a nation has been called a personal triumph for Dr. Nkrumah and a symbol for other African states seeking freedom. Early this year, he initiated and was made chairman of the Conference of Independent African States. And now seated around the press table, ready to interview our guest, are Patrick O'Donovan of the London Observer, May Craig of the Portland, Maine Press Herald, Clifton Daniel of the New York Times, and Richard Klerman of Time Life. And now, Dr. Nkrumah, if you're ready, we'll start the questions with Mr. Klerman.
Mr. Prime Minister, in your trip to the United States and Canada, you have repeatedly said that the foreign policy of your government is basically one of non-alignment and positive neutrality. I wonder if you could tell us exactly what you mean by that.
When I refer to this position as that of non-alignment and positive neutralism, all what we mean is that we have to watch out how we align ourselves with any particular group. But that does not mean a sort of negative neutralism, or rather the suspension of any judgment. If any position were to arise, I think we can take the view which we think is the right view to take.
Well, we frequently have situations in the world now where the East and West, in some cases, the Russians and the Americans are on opposite sides of an issue. Could you say, in terms of this foreign policy that you've just described, where, in such a situation, your government would place its loyalties?
Yes, where we think our interests lie.
Well, let me be a little more specific. We have a situation that is very much in the news now in Lebanon. Where does your interest lie in Lebanon?
At the moment, I think that's why our non-alignment comes in. In the case of Lebanon, it's really non-alignment. We don't want to get into what is now happening there. And I think I've given out my own view on the matter.
Mr. Daniel.
Mr. Prime Minister, let's turn a moment from your foreign policy to ours in the United States. We've talked about the Lebanon. You may be uniquely equipped to give us some advice on this subject and others. You were educated in the United States. Your country belongs to the British Commonwealth. And you are certainly one of the outstanding leaders of African nationalism. Perhaps you can give us some advice about our approach to these emerging new countries in Africa and Asia. Now, specifically, back to the Lebanon, would you say that we were right, from our point of view, to have sent our troops to the Lebanon?
I would not be in a position to say whether you are right or wrong. But as I've pointed out elsewhere, there's no need to apportion blame anywhere. The only thing is for us to try to find out a solution to the problem.
Well, having sent our troops there, what solution would you now suggest? Should we withdraw them? Should we remain with our troops for a time?
I would say that You can withdraw them when, say, you have a United Nations force to replace it.
Well, let's turn then to another country in the area. What would you say should be our attitude toward the new revolutionary regime in Iraq? Should we recognize it? Should we establish relations with it?
Of course, I'm not very well acquainted with actually the real causes of that coup d'etat. And therefore, perhaps it would be difficult for me to give a judgment here.
Well, let me ask you then about something I'm sure you do know something about, and that is, what do you think should be our attitude towards our relations with President Nasser of Egypt, a man whom I believe you know and know very well?
Well, I think the relationship could be that of friendship. I remember discussing this very question with him. He pointed out that at a time when he needed help, he didn't get it. You see, and in order to survive, he has to go somewhere else. And that's why you took that step you took.
Mrs. Craig,
I don't think there is a really big enmity between the United States and United Arab Republic.
Mrs. Craig.
Mr. Prime Minister, would you join the United Arab Republic?
No, because I belong to one of the African states.
Yes. Well, you did call a conference of independent African states. Would you call that forming a bloc?
No, I won't call that forming a bloc. We were particular, very particular about this. We wanted to concentrate on the independent states on the African continent as such. So Egypt was on the African continent. That's what Egypt was invited as an independent country of the continent to attend this conference.
You speak quite often of Libya, Tunisia, Morocco. Would you like to form them into a bloc of which you would be the head?
You were very particular at the conference not to use this word bloc, because all what we are trying to achieve is some sort of a united outlook to solve our common problems. As I made it quite clear, we are not ganging up against anybody.
Well, sir, what do you call that? If you don't call it a bloc, what name do you call it when you get together with common aims and a kind of an alliance?
Perhaps you might call it the African personality, which we think has now emerged.
Well, don't you think
that's mutual cooperation?
Do you think it's the same thing when friends get together to defend each other?
No, we didn't say we are going to get together to defend each other, either by military arms or anything like that. We want to get together so that we shall be able to discuss our common problems. There is your British Commonwealth, and I think there is also your an American Union.
You are friendly with Israel. What would you do if your friend, Mr. Nasser, were to go on with what he says he will do, which is to destroy Israel and push it into the sea?
I don't think I've ever noted that from Nasser, saying that he was going to destroy Israel.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir, he
has. Never come to my notice.
Yes, sir, I've heard him say it.
Then it's going to be a job, that's all.
Well, what would you do, sit idle and let it be done, your friend Israel?
Is it not
let you sit idle and let that be done, your friend Israel?
But that's, I don't think that will be done.
Mr. O'Donovan.
Sir, if I could turn perhaps to the internal affairs of your country. I read quite a lot lately, particularly in the British press, about some rather turbulent political affairs that are going on in Ghana. And I wondered if perhaps you sometimes thought that the British, in leaving, had saddled you with an unsuitable parliamentary system.
I won't say that they left us and saddled us in a sort of a bad parliamentary system. But all depends upon the constitution that is left with you. But can you make it work? I mean, would you say, for instance, that democracy as an institution is perfectly safe in Ghana today?
I would definitely say that democracy in Ghana is perfectly safe. But sometimes, you know, you have to take some measures to really safeguard democracy in its initial stages.
Mr. Prime Minister, can you find any use for the more traditional modes of government in Africa? For instance, you have quite a large system of chiefdoms in your country. Do you find those now getting in the way of the proper development of a modern Ghana?
No. At the moment, most of our chiefs are becoming to realize that the times are changing, and they must also change with the times.
Would it be quite possible in the next election, I mean, would it be theoretically possible in the next election for you to be defeated and the opposition to take over in a quite orderly manner?
It's possible.
Mr. Prime Minister, is it true, as has been said, that although you've given Ghana considerable stability, Ghana has lost some freedom under you? That charge has been made, as you know, in this country.
I wouldn't say that under me. I think Ghana has got more freedom. And any time I'm asked this question, I always say that I wish some of the press from here could go there and study our problems locally. Naturally, we were faced with some definite problems at the beginning, and we had to take some certain steps.
Well, is it true at all that you tend to get rid of your opponents when you don't like their criticism, as also has been charged in Time Life, for example, in this country?
That is not true.
It isn't?
No.
Mr. Clareman.
Mr. Prime Minister, Mr. Spivak has been talking to you about civil liberties inside your country. Do you have a law called a preventative detention law? And am I right in understanding that that is a law by which you may imprison a man up to 5 years for a threat to national security or a threat to foreign policy without any step-by-step judicial process?
Yes, I think I was responsible in introducing that bill myself.
Well, now, in Western terms, that would be considered a peculiar law for a democracy to have on its books. I wonder if you could explain that to us, sir.
You see, we got to a point that you have to adopt certain temporary measures. You see, we have an independent judiciary. We have an independent civil service. When the British, left, they left, shall I put it this way, that they had the power by which, the real authority by which, with which they governed Ghana. They left, and then they did not put it anywhere else. And so everybody started feeling as if that anybody can do whatever he likes. And so we have to find out measures by adopting some temporary measures by which we can really put this thing to stop until everything goes well for us to be able to follow the right line.
May I change the subject to a larger legislative question? Are you in favor of the proposed summit meeting that is apparently about to take place in New York?
Yes, I'm all in favor for the summit conference, because all this argument here and there is only when they meet around the common round table, then they will actually know who is fooling each other.
What do you hope will emerge from this conference?
I mean, when they meet?
After they meet, when they've met, and then what do you hope will emerge from their meeting?
Well, if nothing emerges, at least they have met. And I think since I came, I've been happening all along certain proposals which I've put forward and which I hope the United Nations will take it very seriously.
Mr. Daniel.
Prime Minister, I'd like to return just one moment to the question of the internal affairs of Ghana to ask about another development there. Your country is a member of the British Commonwealth. Do you envision that the country shall remain so for a long time and pursue British institutions and British methods? The reason I ask the question is because since Ghana has become independent, we've seen what seem to be some signs of a breakaway from the British tradition. I believe that For example, you no longer have God Save the Queen as the national anthem. I think the Queen's pictures have been taken off the stamps in the country and replaced, I believe, in some cases with your own portrait. Other evidences of a tendency to drift away from Britain, shall we say.
And you see, we chose, according to our own free will, to remain within the Commonwealth. And I personally feel that it is our mutual interest for us to remain within the Commonwealth. You see, we have had British traditions, language, and education. It will be difficult to break suddenly. But I think there are points that the African has his own personal outlook, and that's why sometimes I made the point that some sort of a republican form of government would suit the African character. But I've gone so far as to make it quite clear that whatever form of republican form we take, we will still continue to remain within the Commonwealth.
Mrs. Craig.
Yeah, Mr. Prime Minister, your country is a very small country and probably could not defend itself militarily. I understand you put your trust in the United Nations.
That's correct.
Is that true?
That's correct.
But the United Nations has no force with which to defend you.
That's why I'm advocating international force for the United Nations.
You mean a police force for the United Nations?
That's right.
Would Ghana contribute to it?
Sure, we shall contribute. You don't have, you have only three battalions, but I think we can put one battalion aside for the United Nations.
Sir?
I said we have only three battalions, but I think we can put one battalion aside for the United Nations.
Yes, but we have never been able to get the United Nations to act in time, even if it had a permanent force. How do you think we're going to get a permanent force for the United Nations?
Well, we have to talk about it in the United Nations when they meet.
I lead you back again to what I asked you in the first place.
Yes.
How can you get along without alliances of friends to help you?
That's why we must all find ways and means of strengthening the United Nations.
You have lived in the United States and were educated here. Do you think the United States is imperialist?
It all depends what you mean by imperialism. But as far as I know, I don't think the United States is imperialistic.
Well, imperialistic.
Yeah, I don't think so.
You do not think so?
No.
Do you regard the United States as the shield of the free world? That's the way we regard ourselves. We have helped everybody who
needed
it.
I wouldn't say the United States alone. The United States and other nations fighting for freedom are the bulwark of that liberty.
You want to stop nuclear testing, I have heard you say. But how do you expect the free world to defend itself if it does not have the most modern of weapons which require, perhaps, testing?
But the stopping of the testing should not be done by the West alone. The other side also must stop testing this atomic test.
Mr. Prime Minister, did I understand you to say that if there were a United Nations force, you would contribute troops to it?
Yes.
Would you be prepared to send troops into Lebanon and Jordan if a United Nations force was set up?
If the condition demands it, yes.
Mr. O'Donovan.
Mr. Prime Minister, I understand you've had a magnificent welcome from an enormous number of American Negroes while you've been here. And I wondered if you'd seen any sign of the sort of sympathy and loyalty and a desire to help among American Negroes which American Jews have for Israel.
I think that sympathy is there. That even though they look upon themselves as Americans, I think the bond of blood and kinship make them feel that perhaps they can do something to help us. And I've put it over to them that something should be done. I think not only when we ask for investment, I think Negro investment also should go to Ghana.
How much, Mr. Prime Minister, does the attitude to the race question in parts of America How much effect does that have on the African mind? For instance, how well known is the name Little Rock in Africa?
Well, I think Little Rock, only those of us probably who can read, or it came to our notice, that majority of the people didn't know at all what was this Little Rock. But anyway, the racial problem is there, and I think at the Accra conference, all of us came out clearly that it doesn't matter wherever it is, you should find some way in which racial segregation will never exist. And it was even suggested that in our own areas, in order to show a good example, that we should bring forward legislation to abolish it in our own states.
Mr. Clyman.
Mr. Prime Minister, it's been said of your economic philosophy that you call yourself a Marxist socialist. Is that correct, sir?
Yeah.
Would you tell us exactly what you mean when you call yourself a Marxist socialist?
When I call myself Marxist socialist, I'm really talking of philosophy. But I don't know how I should really explain it better here. A man must have an outlook, a philosophical outlook. I remember discussing this matter with somebody in, I think, Washington. I don't want to mention names. We were talking about socialism and capitalism. He tried to explain to me that socialism in the long run will lead to dictatorship. I agreed. If you want to follow it logically. Capitalism also, I pointed out, if you want to follow it to its logical conclusion, you might also be heading to dictatorship of money. So in the long run, we try to find out a way that whether it's, most of this has become mere words. It depends upon a man's approach to this problem and what he actually does. You must find a medium.
I understand one of the points of your visit here is to encourage private American capital to invest in Ghana. Mm-hmm. Is that right, sir?
Yeah.
And do you think it is any deterrent to that kind of investment, the economic philosophy which you've just expressed?
I have never found it incompatible with private investment. In fact, we have made it quite obvious. In Ghana, we are following three principles. Certain jobs in certain industries which can be done by private capital, those also that can be done with the cooperation of private capital, and those that can be done by government. We are following these three levels very, very seriously.
Gentlemen, our time is running short. Make your questions short, too. Mr. Daniel.
Prime Minister, I wanted to ask whether you could specifically tell us whether, in connection with your development plans, you have obtained any promises of help since you've been in this country, particularly for the Volta River hydroelectric project.
No, I won't say any definite help, but the atmosphere is so congenial that I hope something might come out of it.
Mrs. Craig.
Mr. Prime Minister, you said in Washington that the Middle East oil resources ought to be brought under international control, with possibly the United Nations handling. And what did you mean by that?
I have always felt that the oil is the troublemaker in the Middle East. And I felt that the best thing is to, in order to stop all these troubles, is to quarantine the whole of the Middle East on the basis of, say, the neutrality of Austria. But I also know that the practical applications or the how these things should be worked out can be done by experts. And that's why I've never commended the way and means in which it should be done.
Mr. Prime Minister, the Genocide Convention, which makes it an international crime to destroy a race, has been ratified, I believe, by 58 members of the United Nations. I don't believe your nation has yet ratified it. Is there any special reason for that?
I don't know much about that.
That is a United United Nations resolution, and I understand that your nation is not ratified, but would you be for ratifying such a resolution which outlaws, makes it an international crime to destroy a race, as Hitler tried to destroy the Jews, for example?
Right thing, the thing condemns itself. I think anybody should be against a thing like that.
Yes, and yet your nation has not ratified it yet.
Because remember, we are only 1 year old. It's now that some of these problems are coming before us.
But you would be
But personally,
for...
I'll be for it.
Mr. O'Donovan.
Mr. Prime Minister, when you come to work practically inside the United Nations, do you find yourself sympathizing most of the time with, say, the Indian delegation and working in with them in the Bandung powers?
Of course, you see, we took part, the African states took part with the Bandung conference. So naturally, in policy making on some real issues relating to Afro-Asian problems, I think we have to talk together. But what matters affecting Africa, I think, is for the 8 independent states to have their own objective outlook on the matter.
Well, the arrival of all these new Asian states has made an enormous difference, both to international affairs and the United Nations. Do you think that in a few years' time, with yourself and perhaps with Nigeria and others, Africa can also bring something new?
That is our purpose.
Mr. Clyman.
Mr. Prime Minister, you've often been called, as you undoubtedly are, the leader of African nationalism. Do you think that the African nationalism that you lead will coexist happily with Colonel Nasser's Arab nationalism, or will they come in conflict?
I hope they do not come in conflict.
Mr. Prime Minister.
Daniel.
There have, in fact, already been differences between yourself and Colonel Nasser in basic policy, haven't there? For example, in your relations with Israel, which was mentioned earlier, and also on this question of the Lebanon. You certainly don't quite agree with Colonel Nasser on the Lebanon. Is there a conflict and a rivalry there?
There is no conflict. I have made the position quite clear on Israel, issue to Nasser. And I think he understood my position. You see, we follow these things only on principles, and that's what I've been dealing with him, even though he's a personal friend of mine.
I'm sorry to interrupt you now, but I see our time is up, Mr. Prime Minister. Thank you very much for being with us. And now, here is our announcer.
Goodbye for Prime Minister Kwame Nkrumah and Meet the Press. For a printed copy of today's discussion, send 10 cents in coin and a stamped self-addressed envelope to the National Publishing Company, Washington 2, D.C.
Our thanks to Prime Minister Kwame Nkrumah and the members of the Meet the Press panel for a stimulating and enlightening half hour.
Now this message from Ben Grauer.
Vacationing Americans will travel more than 11 billion miles this year. If your family's currently planning an extended vacation trip, here's a reminder from the Keep America Beautiful organization. Help preserve the beauty of our highways, parks, and beaches, and other recreation areas. Take pride in your country. Don't leave a trail of litter behind you. Help keep our country clean and free from litter. Teach your children good travel manners, too.